We're holding on last words of Samach Zayin Amud Beis. We've said in the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Fuller, that Rabbi Akiva had said, we talked about in Mishnah about the issur of doing magic, and we talked about that there's two different things. There's the actual doing something, and then there's the actual doing something, and then there's Achiza Seinayim, where you do a sleight of hand, you do an optical illusion to make people think that you did magic and you really didn't. So the first one a person would be chayv skila for, and the second one is only alav. So Rabbi Akiva had given an example in the Mishnah in the name of Rabbi Yeshua that he was an example involving picking cucumbers from a field. You can have a person who actually does it with kishuf, and the result is there really is a pile of cucumbers there that were harvested using magic, and for that he would be chayiv misa, as opposed to then you can have another person who makes it look as though he did it, but really the cucumbers have all along been where they're supposed to be, growing on their vines. And therefore, he only did achiza senayim, and therefore, he's not chayiv misa. He's only doing a lab. So the Gemara asks, you're telling me that this particular thing about this method of doing kishuf involving cucumbers that Rabbi Akiva learned this from Rabbi Yeshua, as it says in the Mishnah, don't we find from the following story that he learned it from Rabbi Eliezer? So now the Gemara is going to go into the whole long story of what happened before Rabbi Eliezer passed away. And then in the course of that story, we're going to mention this matter about the kishuri and about the cucumbers and see that Rabbi Eliezer is the one who taught it to Rabbi Akiva. So why in our Mishnah is he quoting it in the name of Rabbi Yeshua? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, k'shecholo Rabbi Eliezer, when Rabbi Eliezer fell ill, and we're not just talking about that he was sick, as in he temporarily, we're talking about that actually this is going to be before he passed away, nichnasu Rabbi Akiva v'chaved of Levakrei, Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues, the other chachamim, came to visit him. Now the problem was, as we learned, so who yoshev v'kinev shaloi? At that point, Rabbi Eliezer is sitting in his canopy bed, a kinoif, we find in Masech the Sukkah, is a canopy bed where they have four, it's a four-poster bed with a sheet or something spread over it to make a private area. So Rabbi Eliezer is sitting there, the hen yoshim v'tchaklin shaloi. They were sitting, and this chaklin is in his living room, basically. So they didn't actually come in yet because, as we're going to see soon, they weren't sure whether he's ready to have visitors. That day was Erev Shabbos. The Nichnas Hukunus Bnoi Lachlitz Tfilov. His son Hukunus came in to take off his father's tefillin. Where Rabbi Eliezer's father was named Hukunus, so obviously he had named his son Hukunus after his father. So now it's Erev Shabbos. He can't wear tefillin on Shabbos. So therefore, Hukunus came in. It's almost Shabbos to take off his father's tefillin. Shabbos is not Zman Tefillin, and in particular, now Rashi makes the point, actually, that it's not so much. I mean, so Rabbi Eliezer is inside the house. What's the big deal? The big deal is, what if he then ends up going out with them to Rosh Hashanah, where that would be, since Shabbos is not Zman Tefillin, then it might be considered carrying. Tosfos says that still, even if you're not, you also are not allowed to go out with it to the chaser. And really, actually, even if a person is sitting where he is, it would still be osir. It actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, you know, you're not supposed to, of course, you're not, you aren't, we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos. In principle, you have, if it happens, as Gemara tells us in Eruvin, if it happens for whatever reason, a person, let's say, is wearing tefillin when Shabbos comes in and he doesn't have a safe place to keep them, then fine, he's allowed to continue wearing them. But other than that, generally, you're not supposed to, and therefore now Hukunus came in to help Rabbi Eliezer take off his tefillin. Gar Bovi Yosa, but Rabbi Eliezer yelled at Hukunus, "What are you doing?" And so Hukunus left. The Yotzman is Zifa. So he went out having been yelled at, having been embarrassed. Omalahen, so now Hukunus goes over to the Chachamim sitting in the living room, and he tells them, "Kim Duma Anisha Daita Shel Abba Mitrafa." Seems to me that my father must have gone crazy. What do you mean? How doesn't he realize it's almost Shabbos and I need to take off his tefillin? Omer Lahen, so Rabbi Eliezer overhears from the next room. He hears what Hukunus had said. He says, No. Daita Vidas Ima Nitrafa. You want to know who are the crazy ones over here? You have Hukunus and his mother, my wife, are the ones who seem to have gone crazy. Heyach manichen isus skila va'oskin beisus shvus. What are they doing? Ignoring an isus skila, things that are also daraisa on Shabbos, and getting involved with isus shvus. Namely, at most, this wearing tefillin would be on Shabbos, would be an isus shvus. It would be again if he went out with it to a chotzer, if he went out with it to Rosh Hashanah, it wouldn't actually be an isus daraisa. Here you have, they haven't yet lit Shabbos candles. They haven't yet done hatmana to put away the food, to insulate it so that it'll stay warm for Shabbos. Those are things that involve actual, you can't light Shabbos candles after it gets too late. You can't do hatmana after it gets too late. So they should be involved with those kinds of things. And meanwhile, they're getting involved with taking off my tefillin, where at most, even if I went out to Chesed Avim with it, after all, tefillin are worn, and on weekdays, it can be called a tachshit. It's considered an ornament, so even on Shabbos, if I were to wear it outside, it wouldn't actually be that bad. So in other words, they've got their priorities messed up. Now, the point is, you know, it was with Rebbe Eliezer being sick, they were all busy trying to take care of him and everything, which is apparently why they delayed lighting Shabbos candles. But therefore, so he's saying, don't be in such a rush to take off my tefillin. You have these other things to deal with as well. I sent those pieces from the Zohar that many years ago I was participating in a shiur where the Magid Shiur pointed out that you can compare and contrast our Gemara with those two pieces of Zohar. You see mentioned over there also about his tefillin, but in a different way, where he says first you have some of the details from the Gemara over here, but with completely different twists on them, where you have that Hurkanus is not ready to learn secrets of Torah from his father, because he thinks that his father's mind is deranged. Then he realized his father's mind was settled, and he taught him so many exalted secrets of Torah, and then Rabbi Eliezer says my tefillin will be going up to a higher place, meaning in other words that his connection with Hashem is going to be going to someplace higher. So we see the same elements as we have in the Gemara over here about the tefillin and about nitra for daitai, but with a completely different twist on them, the pnimiyus seinyanim of what was going on over here. Anyway, going back to the story here in the Gemara, even Shiro Chachamim Shadaitim Yosheva Solov, so the Chachamim saw that Rabbi Eliezer's mind is settled. Obviously he knows what he's talking about, if he's able to keep track of this kind of thing, that they haven't lit Shabbos candles and that's more important than taking off his tefillin. So they saw Daitim Yosheva Solov, that his mind is clear and an ease on him. Nichnasu v'yoshva l'fanav me'richuk dalet amos. They came in and they sat in front of him, but 4 amos away. Because you have the famous story, the famous tragic story in Bava Metzia about Tanu Shalachnoi, where Rabbi Eliezer many years earlier had argued with the Chachamim on a point of halacha and hadn't wanted to give in. And you have the whole thing over there where he used various supernatural ways to prove his point. And he even had a basko coming and saying in his favor. And Rabbi Yeshua said, Loi b'shamayim hi. So the upshot was, the Gemara says over there, they had to put him in Nidui. So now, even many years later, this nidui had not been mutter, therefore they can't actually come close to him. They have to be 4 amos away, as is the din with somebody who's a nidui. Omer lahen, said Rabbi Eliezer, asked them, Loma bosim, what did you come for? He doesn't want to openly say, and they don't want to openly say that we're coming because you're about to pass away. Omer lo, lumba Torah banu, they said we came to learn Torah. Omer lahen, he says, I'd ask of Loma bosim, well, why don't you come until now? They said we didn't have the time. They didn't want to say openly that the reason was because you were in Nidui and therefore we need to keep you away from our company. So they pretended as though it was just they hadn't had the time. Okay, Ben Yehoyada points out that, listen, first of all, you know, the same way as you're allowed to make to alter the truth because of Shalom, you can also, it's now covered. It wouldn't be to be derech eretz to say we didn't come because we previously put you in Nidui, and maybe they meant that there was one particular time when they didn't have time. So, Omer lahen, but Rabbi Eliezer says, no, I know, we all know the truth why you didn't come, and the fact is, over the years that you didn't come to learn Torah with me, you missed out on a tremendous amount of learning Torah. He says to them, Tameyani im Yamusu Misas Atzman, I will be very surprised if they, meaning you, are going to die a natural death. Well, it's Poshet, he's saying, you know, the way that they treated him, a tremendous tzaddik, he figures because of that, that, you know, they're gonna need a tremendous kapora for that, and because of that, they're gonna end up being among the Asura Harugi Malchus. Who said Rabbi Akiva asks him, what about my death? Am I in the same category? Your death is going to be worse than theirs, which, as we know, Rabbi Akiva had his flesh combed off. Why? Because you, Rashi says that Rabbi Eliezer is telling him, your mind was so much more wide open than theirs. The Gemara elsewhere compares that you could say the mind of Rabbi Akiva compared to all the other Chachamim is like the Ulam, the entryway to the Heichal, which was an enormous sized door, 40 by 20 Amos. So you had a much greater potential to learn so much more Torah from me, and you missed that opportunity. So your missa is going to end up being harsher. Than theirs. As in fact, Maharsha points out, we see later on in the story where we see that there were things that Rabbi Akiva learned from Rabbi Eliezer that nobody else did. So the Aruch HaNer actually points out some details over here, among others, why did Rabbi Akiva ask this question? What makes him think he's going to be in a different category than anybody else? And you have a Gemara, relevant Gemara in Pesachim, then Yehoyada also mentions it, where it says that where Rabbi Eliezer, many, many years earlier, when Rabbi Akiva was still a Talmud, tells him that he's going to pass away, his death is going to be from Shechita. So, and the fact is, he wasn't shechita, he was combed off his flesh with iron combs. So the Aruch HaNer explains that Rabbi Akiva is asking, basically, I know many years ago you told me b'shechita tehei misasei, is that still in effect, or is it now going to be worse? And now Rabbi Eliezer says, because now on top of this, you have all those years ago, the reason why Rabbi Eliezer had said such a thing in the first place, many years earlier, b'shechita tehei misasei, just as the Gemara explains over there, Rabbi Akiva had spoken in a way to Rabbi Eliezer that Rabbi Eliezer considered to be disrespectful. Now he's saying, on top of that, also, you compounded that by not coming all these years with the Chachamim to learn Torah, and after all, you could have sat 4 Amos away, like everybody's doing now, but you didn't, therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says that now you're going to be even worse off. Rabbi Akiva being a great tzaddik, of course, he's judged very, very strictly by the Eibishter. Again, here we also have that piece in the Zohar that also mentions this point about Rabbi Eliezer, the same kind of thing where the Chachamim came to visit him and Shemusha Shal Torah G'dolah Milimuda, it's greater even to serve a Talmud Chacham than even to learn by him. So again, he's the same kind of thing. He says to the Chachamim that you're going to be in serious trouble. You're going to need a tremendous kapara for that. Then the Gemara continues, Notal Shtezer Oysa V'Nichon Al Livay. Rabbi Eliezer took his two arms and placed them on his heart. As if a wrapped up Sefer Torah. Omar, and he says, Oylachem Shtezer Oysa, woe to you, my two arms, Shehen Kishtei Sefer Torah Shenigloin. They're like two Sefer Torah that are wrapped up, that are wrapped up closed, and nobody can read what's inside them. So the hands in particular, we find in many places in Shas where it describes the battle that we do when we go back and forth in learning Torah is compared to a battle where you use your arms and your hands in fighting the battle and using your weapons, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer specifically says the Torah Schayim, that's why specifically he's referring to his arms. So my two arms are like two Sefer Torah that are closed, that are rolled shut. The same way, in other words, I'm going to pass away, and so much knowledge of Torah that I have is going to be lost from the world, as he's going to go on to say. He says, "Harbit Torah lamadti, b'harbit Torah limadti." I learned a lot of Torah, and I taught a lot of Torah, but I want to tell you how little it is compared to what could have been done. "Harbit Torah lamadti," I learned a lot of Torah from my Rebbeim, I didn't even reduce the gap between my knowledge and the knowledge of my Chachamim by as much as a dog licks from the ocean. Meaning, in other words, when you compare the greatness and Rabbi Eliezer's Rebbeim, including in particular Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, where the Gemara elsewhere has tremendous things to say about him. So, like, if you compare. If you take the entire ocean and then you have a dog takes a little lick of water from it, the same way when you consider the vastness of their knowledge and the little amount of my knowledge compared to them, it's a greater gap than the difference between the whole ocean and what a dog licks up. So in other words, I could have learned tremendously more Torah from my Rebbeim. And then, v'hava totally madzi, and he says the same thing. I've taught a lot of Torah to my students, but still, l'chisuni tamidai elakim mitchol b'shveferes. All my talmidim were able to reduce from my knowledge, from the amount of knowledge that I have compared to them, is like when you take a mikchol, an applicator, and you put it into a tube of eyeshadow, and you use it to apply to the eye or something. So again, you only have like a tiny amount, but relative to what I could have taught. So in other words, in both cases, there was so much more that could have been learnt, and so much more that could have been taught, compared to what there was. So he says, in other words, now and then it's a little bit of a gnai to himself. After all, he's comparing himself to a dog. He didn't want to use that same kind of gnai on his talmidim, so therefore instead he said that they're like an applicator for eyeshadow. So in that piece of Zohar, you also have that he didn't want to give credit to himself, which is why he makes it sound, relatively speaking, this Talmidim accomplished more from him than he did from his Rebbeim. But really, of course, it may have been the other way around. Anyway, he goes on to say, I want to tell you how much there was of Torah that is going to be lost now when I pass away. Remember, this is when Torah Shebaal Peh was still Baal Peh, so it's not like he could have written it down. So v'loy oy, this is not only that. Elashani shonish shloish meis halochas v'baheres aza. I had learned 300 halochas about a bright baheres. A baheres is one of the four major types of saras. So I knew 300 halochas about it. V'loy hoya odom shesheyalani b'hen dovam olam, and nobody ever asked me about it. So they never thought to ask him. The Yad Ramah says that's what he's saying. Not only you didn't learn very much by me, but you didn't even think to ask. You didn't even realize that there's what to ask about these things. And he continues, V'loy oy, not only that, Elashani shoyne shloish meis halochas, not only that, but I know 300 halochas, v'amrila shloishas halofim halochas. Others say that he said at this point 3,000 halochas, v'netiyas kishuin, about this matter of planting cucumbers using kishuf, which is how we got into this whole point over here. So 300 or 3,000 halachas about that. V'loy hoya adam she'alani b'hen dovam ha'olam chutz me'akiva ben Yosef. And out of all the Talmidim and all the Chachamim who could have asked me about it, the only one who ever asked me about it is Akiva ben Yosef, Rabbi Akiva. So here, at least, Rabbi Akiva went and learned from him. But again, like Rashi says, in a way, that makes things worse. We see, or Marshal says, actually, we see that Rabbi Akiva had so much capability to learn from Rabbi Eliezer. So he's saying, why didn't he come all these years to learn Torah instead of missing all these opportunities? So what happened with these cucumbers? He says, Pamachas aniva hu mahalchin hayina badera. One time, he and I, Rabbi Akiva and I, were walking on the road. Omali, he says, Rebbe vamdeni benetiyas kishuin, teach me this matter of planting cucumbers with magic. Amarti dover echad, I said one word, nismala kolasod kishuin, and the entire field was filled with cucumbers. Now, how could he do that? Rabbi Yezer is not allowed to practice magic. The Gemara is going to explain that on the last lines of the perek, at the end of the Omud. And Omali, he says, Rebbe Limdasani Limantani Nitiosan, you've taught me now how to plant them, Lamdeni Akirosan, show me how with magic a person would uproot them. Amarti Dover Achar, I said one thing, Viniskabsukul and Lamokam Achar, and all of them were gathered to one place. So in other words, so you see, here there's all this, and obviously we're not just talking about saying the one thing, there's a lot of detail behind that he's just saying by just hiding with the word Dover Achar, but only Rabbi Akiva ever thought to ask him about this. Now, at this point, we have the point of the question that the Gemara is asking on the Mishnah, because the Gemara had asked that Rabbi Eliezer, that we see that Rabbi Eliezer taught this to Rabbi Akiva, whereas in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is quoting this concept about Matias Kishurin in the name of Rabbi Yeshua. But still, of course, the Gemara is now going to finish off the story. Omruloi, so now the Chachamim said to Rabbi Eliezer, we want to know your opinion about certain areas in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Now these are all things Rashi points out where previously Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim had disagreed on these things. They want to know, does he still stick to his opinion? And by the way, again, as far as this matter of Rabbi Akiva learning one-on-one from Rabbi Eliezer, again, we have in those two pieces of Zohar, we have where Rabbi Eliezer is about to speak of Maisa Merkava, and then a fire comes down, and the other Chachamim realize that we're not worthy for this, and he told him about a Baheres Aza, like we're saying over here in the Gemara, and he told him Psukim about Shir Hashirim, and so forth. So again, you have much of the same material as in our Gemara, but reworked and restated in a completely different way, in a more pneumia sicker way in these pieces of Zohar. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Omrulai, the Chacham asked him, here are some questions in Hilchos Tumah V'Taharah. A kadr, a ball, so you take a piece of leather, you stuff it with some kind of stuffing, and you sew it closed. So what's the question with each one of these kinds of things is whether they're makabel tumah. Vahimus, or vahimum, is a form that you make a shoe on. You have the ones that they had in those days, it actually describes, they would also, similar kind of thing, they'd have a piece of leather, they would fill it up with stuffing, and make it in the shape of a shoe, and now, when a cobbler is making a shoe, then he would put the leather on that, and he would bang on it, and then shape it to the shape of that form, of that mold. So again, it's something which you have a piece of leather which is filled up with something inside. The point of each of these things is that these are things where once you put in the filling, generally it's intended to stay that way. There's no intention to take out the filling. It's planned to stay that way. So the question is whether they're makabel tumah. Vakameya, another one is a kameya, an amulet, where also you take a piece of leather and fill it with something and you hang it around somebody's neck as an ornament. Utsrur ha-margolis, and a bundle that you use to put in a jewel into it. They would do that, Rashi describes, they would do that if they needed the jewel, the precious stone or whatever, would be something that would help cure the animal. The animal would be sick, so they'd do it. It would be some kind of segula that they'd put a precious stone around the animal's neck, and they would wrap it in a piece of leather for safety. You know, it occurred to me when I was learning this Gemara, you have the famous story of Shimon ben Shattach, where his Talmidim bought him a donkey to make his job easier, and then they found a jewel hanging around his neck, and Shimon ben Shattach says, you got to return it to the guy we bought it from, and he does, and it makes a Kiddush Hashem. Why does a person have in that story also, very likely, why did he have the jewel hanging around the neck in the first place? Probably based on the similar thing, as Rashi is saying over here at one point. Probably the animal had been sick, so he put the jewel around its neck, and then afterwards he forgot that it was there. Anyway. So all those kinds of things, umishkolas ktana, and a small weight. So you use a small piece of stone or metal or whatever you use as a weight on a balance scale. So now what you do is you cover it with leather so it doesn't wear out, so it doesn't get rubbed out. Larger ones, Rashi points out, and Tosfos elsewhere points out as well, are not usually wrapped in leather for that purpose, because they're not as likely to get rubbed out. In any case, all these kinds of things, they were asking him, Mahu, what's the din? Are they makabel tumah? The point of the question is, in all these cases, Rabbi Eliezer held that, and now it's like this, in order for leather to be makabel tumah, it has to have a base kibul. It has to be similar to wood in this regard. It has to be that it has a receptacle, that there's something in it that's meant to be filled up. So now the question is, each of these things, once you fill them up, it's planned to stay that way. It's not planned to take the thing out of it. A bowl, for example, once you put in the stuffing, there's no reason to take out the bowl. There's no reason to take out the stuffing. And the same thing with each of the other ones. So is it makabel tumah? Rabbi Eliezer held that yes. Doesn't matter that's filled up permanently. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer said that the halacha is that it's makabel tumah. The other chachamim disagreed. Then Rashi points out you have another relevant machloikus in this. What happens if these things rip open where now you can see the stuffing? So now, for sure, of course, now they're makabel tumah. Now the question would be, what about when toveling it? If now the bowl is, now the, let's say the bowl becomes tummy, would you actually have to take out the stuffing before you tovel it? Because otherwise the stuffing is a chatzitza or not. So the first thing they asked him is, are these things makabel tumah? Mahu, what's the din? Omalahan hein tmein, he tells them that they're still makabel tumah. I still maintain my opinion that they are makabel tumah. Then they ask him, and he adds, "V'tarosan b'mashahein," and their tara is as they are. Meaning, in other words, that, again, if they do rip open and now you can see the stuffing, then you say that you have to remove the stuffing before you tovel on the mikveh, I say that, no, you can tovel them as it is, and you don't need to take out the stuffing. Tosfos points out that particular machlokas we don't actually find explicitly between Rabbi Eliezer and the other Chachamim. We find a machlokas, we do find in a Tosefta, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Afmat Vilin Kamoshahain. So we see that Rabbi Eliezer holds that we're saying over here, that these things can be toveled as it is, and you don't need to take out the stuffing. So in other words, in both these things, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that I still maintain my previous opinion. Next. The next thing, then they asked him another question, also involving the shoe last, also involving this frame, this form that they make, that a cobbler makes a shoe on. So now here's another machloikas that they had. What happens, in general, a kedi is not makabel truma until it's completed, until gemar melacha. So you have machloikas in a number of cases, what exactly is considered gemar melacha? So the question was, minal shav gabi ha'imus, when you have a shoe that's still on the last, so the cobbler has already shaped it, but he hasn't yet taken it off the last. Mahu, what's the din? Is it makabel truma at that point? Now, one way of looking at it is that it should be makabel truma. It's already been completed. The other way of looking at it is no, it still has to be taken off the last. The chachamim take the view that since you don't need a professional, you don't need the cobbler himself to take it off the last. Anybody would know how to do that. So therefore, it can be considered that's already gemar malacha. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer disagrees and says that's not gemar malacha until it's actually taken off. So now they ask them again, what do you hold by that? Have you changed your mind on that? So mahu. So minoshra gabia imus mahu. Omalahen, who tahar? So he answered them, the shoe is tahar. And at that point, the yotzen, ishmasi b'tara, his soul left him as he said the word tahar. Omad Rabbi Yeshua Raglov, Rabbi Yeshua, who was one of the chachamim who had come to visit, he stood up and said, huter haneder, huter haneder. The neder has been cancelled. The neder has been cancelled. This neder that they had when they put him in nidui, it was really more. It wasn't necessarily the regular kind of nidui, because after all he was a great Talmud Chacham and Tzaddik. It was more like a neder that they had said we're not going to come anywhere near him because of the whole story of Tano Shalachnoi. So now that he passed away, now Rabbi Yeshua announces that the neder has been mutter. One point of that is, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that where a person is in Nidui and passes away still in Nidui, and he doesn't go to the Chachamim to ask to have the Nidui taken off, then they're supposed to put a stone on his mitzvah, on his bier, when they take him out to bury him, to show like he deserves skila. So here, obviously, Rabbi Yeshua didn't want that to happen. Rabbi Eliezer was a great tzaddik, and the reason why there had been the machlokas in the first place, and the reason why he'd been put in Nidui in the first place, everything was l'shem shamayim, so therefore, now that he passed away, Rabbi Yeshua immediately stands up and says, the neder is mutter, so that we shouldn't have to treat him like that. The Gemara continues, L'mitzoy Shabbos. Now, this was all on Erev Shabbos, we said. So they didn't have a chance to bury him before Shabbos. When it came, we said it was right before Lichtin, and that's why we said that they were late with Lichtin, and Rabbi Eliezer was yelling at them at the beginning of the story. So now, on Motzei Shabbos, when they were carrying Rabbi Eliezer's coffin to bury him, Pogaboy Rabbi Akiva min Kesri Lud. Rabbi Akiva met up with them between Kesri and Lud. Now, Rabbi Eliezer himself, we mentioned earlier in the Masechta, that he lived in Lud. He was the Rav over there. But here we're saying that it was being brought from Kesri to Lud. So evidently, Rabbi Eliezer had passed away in Kesri. He doesn't say why. One possibility, of course, is they were carrying it from place to place, but the other, in order to show him honor. But the other possibility is maybe he had been in Kesri in his final days. Maybe he hadn't been, maybe because he hadn't been feeling well. Maybe they said that Rashash points out that maybe he had to go there for medical treatment or something. So Rabbi Akiva met up with the funeral procession. V'hoya makib b'psoroi. Rabbi Akiva was so saddened and so upset by Rabbi Eliezer had passed away, he was striking his own flesh until his blood was flowing on the ground, out of tsar, that his Rebbe had passed away. Now, Tosfos points out, you have an issue in the Torah, loisus goydidu, of setup lanefesh, a person is not allowed to make gashes or cuts in their skin in grief for a mess like a goyim would do. So how is Rabbi Akiva doing that? So here, Tosfos says, that the answer is because he wasn't so much grieved for Rabbi Eliezer as a person, but rather for the Torah that has now been lost. Like we just said, that Rabbi Eliezer had said, there was so much Torah that I could have taught that now is going to be gone. So that kind of thing would be mutter when he's doing it because of tzad of Torah. There's a different place in Yevamos where Tosfos gives a different answer, which is that maybe the Torah only answers it only like if he goes with his nails and scratches his skin, or he takes a knife and starts making gashes or cuts in his skin. And here, Rabbi Akiva is not doing that. It just says make, he's striking his flesh until he starts bleeding. Anyway, whatever the case, he was doing it out of tremendous tzad. Now, you do also have the question, a person is not allowed to injure themselves either. So the Aruch HaNer gives the answer that, again, maybe it's mutter because of the covet of Torah, but maybe the Aruch HaNer says maybe he didn't know, actually, he didn't realize how hard he's striking himself, that it's actually going to cause him, that it's actually going to cause him to bleed. Rav Moshe, in one of his Chuvas, actually goes in detail and discusses this, and he explains the answer is that it's only author where it's being done. Person is not allowed to injure himself where he's doing it for the sake of injuring, like we derech nitzoyen that Amram calls it, where he's doing it in a way like davka to hurt himself deliberately. But here, actually, he's doing it. It helps calm him down, kind of. So therefore, such a thing would be mutter. Anyway, he says. So then when it came to the Levaya, when it came to the Hesped, Posach Olav, Rabbi Akiva began the Hesped, Bashura, when they were in the row of people, which as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you would have the Avelim would be walking through, they would have Shura, they would have a row of people by the two on both sides, and the Avelim would walk through, and people would be Menachem over them. So at that point, is also when they would say the Hesped, so Rabbi Akiva began the Hesped, V'Omar, he says the words, you find the Posach, that you find when Elisha says these words, when Eliyahu was taken up to Shemayim, Ovi, Ovi, my father, which means my Rebbe, Rechav Yisrael, the chariot of the Jewish people and their horsemen, which means when Elisha said that about Eliyahu, and later on when Yoyash Melech Yisrael says it about Elisha, he means that your tefillahs and your zchusim for the Jewish people are more effective than all the horses and chariots of the Jewish people. So now Rabbi Akiva is using the same turn of phrase, the same expression, about Rabbi Eliezer. He says, "Harim Mois Yeshli." I'm like a person who has lots of coins, the English Shulchani LaHartzoysen, and I don't have a money changer to go and check them out and see whether they're good coins. In other words, the same way, I have so many questions in Torah, and I have nobody to ask. I have nobody to ask anymore. So now he realizes, in other words, how much he's missing from the fact that Rabbi Eliezer had passed away. And therefore that's why he was in such grief in that piece of the Zohar. We also have that Rabbi Akiva is saying that to go tell the sun and moon that a light that shone more brightly than Neju has been extinguished. So that was the story of Rabbi Eliezer's Petira. So now, having told that whole story, Alma, we see from this story, my Rabbi Eliezer Gomra, that Rabbi Akiva learned this whole matter So Marashah actually talks about that why Rabbi Akiva used Davka this pasuk. So first of all, it means again that he was our hero, he was our champion in the war of Torah, and he's using the metaphor of a shochani, of a money changer that if you don't know what coins are good and what are not and which ones are not good, then you're going to end up losing out. The same way Rabbi Akiva, of course, has tremendous amounts of Torah of his own, but I don't recognize what exactly is good and what's not. So therefore, like in other words, to clarify all my sfeikas, and therefore I'm like in the position of a person who doesn't have a money changer to consult with. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara says, Alma, so we see from this story that Mirab Eliezer Gomra, that Rabbi Akiva had learned this whole matter of how it works with the Kishuim, with the cucumbers, he learned it from Rabbi Eliezer. So why is our Mishnah saying that he said in the name of Rabbi Yeshua? So the answer is, Gomra, Mirab Eliezer, Voi Svara. He learned it from Rabbi Eliezer. He saw Rabbi Eliezer do it, but he didn't fully understand it. Then he again learned it from Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua explained it to him thoroughly. So therefore, in our Mishnah, he's quoting it in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, because ultimately it's through Rabbi Yeshua that he actually knows it in practice. All right, the Gemara asks, Heichi Ovid Hochi, how could Rabbi Eliezer do this kind of thing in the first place, to use magic to make the cucumbers appear and to make them gathered up? We said in the Mishnah that a person is oisa maisa, he causes things to happen through kishuv, then he's chayav misa. The answer is slamed shiny. It's different when he's doing it in order to teach. Rabbi Eliezer is doing it in order to teach Rabbi Akiva, and that kind of thing is allowed. As we know, the members of the Sanhedrin have to know about kishuv. First of all, if a person is brought to them on a charge of kishuv, they need to know what they need to be able to understand what exactly he did to know whether it is oisa maisa or achiza senayim. And also, in case, for example, let's say they have somebody who they've convicted, and now they're not going to be able to get him because he's going to use kishuv to get away with them. So they need to be able to counteract his kishuv. So the Islam of China, it's different when it's being done in order to teach Torah. The Amamar, as in fact we say in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says about these various kinds of magic, like Silmad Lasos, you're not allowed to learn them in order to do them. From that we learn, Lasos, Iatalomid, you're not allowed to learn them in order to do them. Avalatalomid, Lahobin, Lahodis, but you're allowed to learn it in order to understand it and in order to teach it. So that, in other words, again, if a Navi Sheker or whatever comes by with doing this kind of thing, then you're going to be able to know whether what he was doing was true kishuv or achiz asenayim or all of that, and to be able to and to be able to get him. So that kind of thing he's allowed to do. For that matter, in halacha, the Bach brings that for the same reason a person might be able to learn kishuv in order to save himself and other people. In other words, it's a matter of it that that you're going to have this pekuach nefesh involved, or even maybe not to the level of pekuach nefesh, but where somebody might be in danger and you can save them with kishuv, then you would be allowed to learn, and even according to the Bach, to practice kishuv for that purpose. Hadron aloch arba misses. Okay, so now in the previous perek, we went through 17 of the people who are chayav skila. The one that we left out is ben sora remora. So because he has more complex halachas, therefore the Mishnah and the Gemara have left him for another perek, and now the first half of our perek is going to deal with the details of the ben sora remora. So, ben sora remora, me'emasai nasa ben sora remora, from what age onward could he even become a ben sora remora in the first place? So, mishiyavi shtei sairas, the minimum age is when he has two hairs. Before that, he's a cotton, so he can't be punishable. So therefore, so of necessity, it has to be that he's at least 13 and has developed shtei sairas. And the maximum age is va'ad sheyakif zokon, until his beard is surrounded with hair. Now, which beard do we mean? Hatachton. We mean the lower beard, meaning the hair around his erva. V'loy ha'elyon. We don't mean the upper beard. So we mean, in other words, he develops shtei sairas over time, over the next few months. The hair starts growing in down there, and eventually you have enough of it that it surrounds the whole area. So why did the Mishnah use the word zokon? The Chachamim wanted to use clean language instead of speaking openly about hair growing around the erva. So they use the expression ad sheyakif zokon, and the later Chachamim explained to us which zokon it means. So shenema, how do we know all this? The pasuk says ki yil ish bein. The Pasuk says, when a man has a son, and the son is a sora remora. So first of all, ben v'loy bas. So first of all, that means only a boy, not a girl. So if a girl does, now you're going to have, we're going to go, as we go through the perek, the various things that the boy has to do in order to be a ben sora remora, even if, so if a girl were to do these exact same things, she wouldn't be chayav misa. So ultimately, everything that we're going to be learning in this perek on the subject of ben sora remora is basically gzeiras hakosev. It's basically that's how the Torah says it, and then that's how it is. I mean, he gives a logical reason. He says maybe boys are more likely to get into their tivus. The whole thing we're going to say is the boy is stealing money and eating in a pritzistic way, and maybe girls are less likely to do that. On the other hand, the Rambam, when he mentions it, he says you would think, actually the Gemara is going to say, more logically, you would think that a girl, all the more so, there's other terrible averus that she could get into as a result of eating like this and using up all her parents' money. But that's how it is. The gzeiras hakosev, that it applies only to boys. So that's first of all. Ben v'lo'ish. We also learn the word ben means that he himself is not a man. Once you have hikif zakan, once you have that there's enough hair growing down there, then already he's considered an ish himself, and therefore he's not in the category of ben sodomota. So that's where we get. So on the one hand, he has to have shtei sairus is because, again, otherwise he's a cotton, and he's not chayav misa in the first place. But because it says ben, implying not ish, then therefore you have that maximum that we said in the Mishnah. So therefore, so the Mishnah says, cotton, potter, shall they ball of mitzvahs? A cotton would be potter because he's not yet in the category of mitzvahs. So in other words, that's why we have these upper and lower bounds that it can't be before and it can't be after because therefore if the Torah is going to be mamayat, it obviously has to be mamayat in both directions. So the Gemara starts off, cotton menolim de potter. So the Gemara asks, how do we know that a cotton would be potter as a ben sodomota murder? The Gemara asks, what do you mean menolim? Kitzkatani taima, the Mishnah itself gives a reason. Shaloi bola chlal mitzvahs, he's not yet in the category of mitzvahs. He's not as chayiv in mitzvahs. The two, and anyway, what's your question? Heicha ashkechon, the onesh hakosev, where do you ever find anywhere else in Torah that a child would be punishable for his averus? The hocha leboi krol mitzvah, that you're telling me that over here you need a specific pasuk to pater him. So in other words, the first question is b'chlal. We never find that a cotton is a first of all, the Mishnah tells us how we know. And second of all, why we even need a pasuk if anyway a cotton is always potter from Misa. So the Ran explains the point of the two questions are not repetitive. The first question is asking that we shouldn't give him Misa. But the second question is asking, fine, maybe not Misa. Maybe at least Beis Din should give him some other kind of punishment in order to make everybody else fearful and realize not to act like that. So the answer is that, we never find the Torah anywhere says that a cotton should get Oynish. So the answer is, you're right, the Gemara says, Anan hochi kamyunan. The point of the question was as follows. Otu ben sur al chete nerag. After all, is ben sur remora really being executed because of his avera? With the things that he did, which we're going to discuss as we go through the perek, he steals money from his father, and he eats this gluttonous kind, he eats and drinks in this gluttonous kind of way. Those are not things that would make a person chayiv misa. So really, ultimately, al shem soifoi nerag. Really, as the Mishnah says later, as the Braisa says later on in the Perek, that he's really being killed al shem soifoi. That he's being, because the Torah realizes, and actually brings it on the positive, that eventually if he keeps up with this, and eventually he's going to become a robber and kill people, etc. So the Torah says proactively, we should remove him from the world before he gets to that point. So that being the case, then, this is unusual. We don't usually do that. We don't usually punish a person proactively before he does the actual avera. So therefore, the kibbin dal shem soifer nerag, given that therefore he's being executed for this unusual reason, because of the future, maybe after the cotton nami, maybe the same thing should apply to a cotton. We would say, yeah, the Torah never punishes a cotton. The Torah never punishes a person ahead of when he did the actual aveda either. And yet we say that in this case he is. So maybe it should be an exception, and in fact he should be punishable as a cotton as well. The oid, especially because ben v'loy ish, after all, the pasuk does say a ben, a son, from which we learn specifically not ish, so maybe cotton mashma. Maybe it implies also a cotton. So maybe in this unique case, for these two reasons, maybe in fact even as a cotton he should get punishable. So in other words, the fact that the Mishnah had said ben v'loy ish is really not reason enough. That helps us understand, fine, but then the question is, taka, why not? Why don't we say that, it means ben v'loyish, it means once he reaches the age of hikif zakon, then already he's not a ben anymore. But maybe it should mean up to that point, then he should be chayav. I, cotton potter, shall I bolach la mitzvahs. Well, why should it be that he's potter? Maybe in this particular case, he should be chayav. The answer is, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, d'amar k'rav, chiyil ish ben. Since the pasuk says that a man has a son, so we can darshan as follows. It means when the son is on the verge of becoming an ish himself. So therefore, in other words, it does have to be that he's reached an age, that he's reached a stage in his development where he himself can already be called ish. So therefore, it means ben asamoch legvurosei shel ish, means that he's a son, he's a boy, but he's close to the power of a man. So now, in other words, so from when he develops Shtei Sairus until Hikif Zokon, at that point, then we have, that's the point, in other words, that now he is a Ben, but on the other hand, he's also reaching the stage of an Ish. So that's what it means, in other words, so it has to be both. Tosfos points out a question that here we have when it comes to Nidorim, we have a special din. Normally a child is not chayiv in mitzvahs, but for 1 year before their bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, then we say they're called muflas samoch le'ish or muflas samoch le'isha, and therefore their Nidorim are valid. Maybe the Pasuk is telling us during that 1 year before, during that one year before his bar mitzvah, then already he can become a ben sorer umara. So first Tosfos explains that no, because since it says l'ish means that he's strong, and therefore that has to be that he's at least bar mitzvah. But then also Tosfos points out that since, based on the continuation of the Gemara, we're going to say that it also has to be he's old enough to father a child. So it means that no, it can't possibly mean mufla samoch l'ish, because at that point he's not old enough for that yet. So therefore it has to be. That it means that he's already considered a man, and therefore, in other words, so ben v'chiyala ish ben means, in other words, that the ben is like an ish kind of. This is how the Yad Ramah explains Tosfos that it means that the ben himself has to be like an ish. So we see that in fact it can't be a child after all. All right. Now the Mishnah had said va'ad sheyakif zokan atachzim v'chola. We said that he can only be a ben sorer umara until the hair grows around that area. So what do you mean around what exactly? Toni Rav Chiya ad sheyakif atora. Rav Chiya says specifically it means until this zokan atachzim, until the hair down there surrounds the atora. Well, what do we mean the atora exactly? The atora usually in Gemara terminology, atora, which means the crown, usually means it's in English, in medicalese, it's called the corona, which means the tip of the aver. But no hair grows over there, so what do we mean? So ki osir of dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he explained hakofas gid v'lo yakofas beisim. What it means is there has to be enough hair to surround the whole gid, to surround the whole aver itself, but not that it has to be that all of that the beitzim that are also covered and surrounded by hair. That would be at a much later stage. So it has to be, again, the earliest age where you can be a ben sorer umara is Shtei Sairus. The latest age is, now you have, as the hair grows in over there, first you have a period of time where it's surrounding the gid, where it's not yet surrounding the basin, then you have, only much later does it surround those, so therefore the Mishnah is saying, Ad Sheyakif Zokan means that second stage. Not the first one. The second stage, rather, not the third one, which is when the basin are surrounded by hair as well. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chisda, cotton shaholid ein bnoi nasa ben sorer umara. Suppose that a cotton were to father a child, and it is somehow as possible for a boy at that age to be able to, then his son would not be able to become a ben sorer umara, even if the son. So in other words, you have over here, you have Yaakov was 12 when he fathered a son Reuven. Now Reuven eventually grows up and starts acting like a ben sorer umara. We're saying that he wouldn't be chayav misa. Says Rav Chisda, Shenema ki yil ish bein, because the pasuk says, when a man has a son, le ish bein, v'loy le ben bein. So only when a man has a son, not when a son himself has a son. So meaning, in other words, when the father himself was underage, when he fathered this boy, then the boy is going to be potter, is not going to be able to become a ben sorer umara. So the Gemara says, what do you mean though? Don't we need the words l'ish bein? Don't we need the words l'ish bein to teach us what we just said before in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav that he has to be davka after bar mitzvah and after Shtei Sairus, and that we don't say over here that we should make an exception and he'd be punishable as a cotton. So how now is Rav Chisda learning something else from the same words? The answer is in kein le'makrok ye ben l'ish. Fine, but then the pasuk could have said, when there is a son to a man. So therefore what it means, when the son is reaching the age of a man, and then therefore mean that he has to have Shtei Sairus. My kiyil ish bein, when it says the other way around, when the ish has a ben, shmamina lochid Rav Chisda, therefore we can also use it to teach us what Rav Chisda is saying, that it means the father of the ben sorer umara himself had to be an ish at the time when the child was conceived. All right, the Gemara asks, "Ve'im akulo l'hoch Yehuda also." Fine, maybe the pasuk is teaching us only that concept. Maybe it's not teaching us Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's din at all, and therefore we're back to saying that maybe he could be punishable as a cotton. And the answer is imkain. If that were the case, ne'makra ben ish. Then the Torah didn't have to use the, then the Torah could have said, when there's a son of a man. And that would mean exactly what Rav Chisda is saying, that the son has to be the father, has to be born to a man. Myra ish bain. Instead it says, to a man, a son. And first it mentions the ish. Shmamina tauti. Therefore we have both drushes. Number one, that the father of this boy himself had to have been a godol at the time when the child was conceived. And number two, that the child himself has to be above the ASV, has to have reached Shay Cyrus after 13 years old, otherwise he's underage and he's not punishable. Alright, now the Gemara points out, Upliga de Rabba. Now though, what Rav Chisda is saying disagrees with Rabba. Now the point is, in other words, so we're talking the actual, so we're not talking as far as the din, but as far as the fact. Rav Chisda is saying as a fact, it is possible for a child to father a child. He can be below bar mitzvah, anyway, he's able to father a child. But Rabba disagrees with that premise and says that's not possible. The Amar Rabba, cotton ain't a merlin. Rabba says we can prove from psukim that a child, that somebody, a boy below bar mitzvah, is not able to father a child. Shenema, the pasuk says, v'im ein lo ish goyel. The pasuk describes a scenario. Now we have, if a person steals from somebody else and swears falsely about it, so we learned back in Bava Kamma that when he does tshuva, he's going to have to pay that person the kerem plus a choymesh, plus he's going to have to bring a korban asham. Now, the pasuk describes a case, v'im ein lo ish goyel, if the man does not have a goyel. If he doesn't have a close relative, then we say the payment is given to the koyanim, as we, the koyanim of that mishma, we learned about it towards the end of Bava Kamma. So the question is, so how do you ever have a Jew who doesn't have a living relative? As we learned in Bava Basra, you go generation by generation up as necessary, as far as many generations up as you need to, if the person didn't leave any living descendants, and you go up the tree, you go to his father, his brothers, his grandfather, his uncles, his great grandfather, his great uncles, and so forth, and you keep going up the tree until you go to the head of the Shevet, to the progenitor of the Shevet, if you need to. So you never have any Jew who doesn't have a goyel. This is where we learn that it's talking about gezel ager, which again, we learned about this in Bava Kamma, that a person does the same thing. He steals money from a ger, otherwise misappropriates money that belongs to a ger. And then now the ger died without children, and the ger doesn't have any other relatives in halacha, so therefore instead you give the payment to the kohenim. So continues Rabba, the Omarachmana ish. Now the Torah in this connection says the word ish, from which we learn ish atatzorof achazer alavim yeshla goyelin v'imlav, because if the person from whom the money was taken was an ish, then you have to start investigating whether in fact he has any relatives, because he might have children or grandchildren or great grandchildren that you don't know about. So therefore, it's not so simple to give it to Koyanim. First you have to go and check into it. Even in other words, we're talking about a ger. So if this ger is an adult, you can't just say as a given when he dies, well, he had no relatives. You have to find out whether in fact his relatives from when he was a goy are not considered relatives, but any children that he has after he became a ger are fully his children, and therefore you would have to find out whether they exist before you start giving it to the Koyanim. We even had cases in Bava Basra. We had cases where people take the nechosim of a ger after he died, thinking that he was childless, and then it turns out that he has a child, and they have to go and give back everything they took. So in the same way over here, therefore the pasuk says, v'im ein lo ish goyel, to stress that if he's an ish, then you have to go and check that out first. On the other hand, cotton, but when he's a cotton, you don't even need to check it out, because it's obvious that he has no goyel, because as a child, he's a child who became a ger. So obviously, therefore, he has no goyelim, because there's no way that he could have had children. So the point is, in other words, that says Rabbah, you see from this braisa that therefore that a child is not able to father a child. So not like Rav Chista is saying that he could, and that therefore he his son conceivably could grow up to be a ben sarah remora. But in fact he doesn't, because the pasuk says ki yila ish ben. So Rabbah is disagreeing with the whole premise that a child can even father a child in the first place. Tosfos actually discusses in some length over here, so what exactly is the case anyway where the Kotan would have money such that this whole matter of Gezel Ager would come up in the first place? So Tosfos spends a lot of time discussing the details of that. What are the cases where a child could be zoicha in money? Is there the possibility that maybe he can be zoicha for himself and just he can't be mezaka to others? Is there maybe somebody else could be mezakah to him, and so on and so forth. And Tosfos gets into a whole long discussion comparing it with different Gemaras. Another example Tosfos says is, let's say the Kotan does in fact do some work, and then he in fact makes something or whatever, then yes, his money might belong to him, Daraisa, because after all it was his effort. Then Tosfos also deals with the question, how is the person ever going to be chayiv and osham? When a kotan makes a claim in Beiskin, you don't swear about it. So, and he's only chayiv and osham only if there was a false shvua. So Tosfos explains that maybe there could be, when there was one aid, for example, then he would have to swear. Also, what if he went ahead and swore without even the child asking him to? And how do you have a child becomes a ger in the first place? Tosfos discusses you could have his mother became a geodas and she was pregnant with him. And so there are a lot of different details that the Gemara is here just mentioning, a ger cotton. And you have to deal with a lot of details over here, exactly what is the scenario over here. So in any case, the point is, Rabbah is saying, you see from that braisa, that it's impossible for a cotton to have children. Otherwise, the braisa wouldn't be saying that the pasuk is saying the word, that the pasuk is saying the word ish for that purpose. So the Gemara continues, Eisvei Abayas. Abayas says to Rabbah, well, wait a minute, then you're telling me that a child is not able to father a child, and therefore that you disagree with Rav Chista's din, but we have a different pasuk where it also mentions Ish, and we have something involving a child there. Where in connection with a shivcha harufa. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, the ish that sheyishkave that a man has relations with a shivcha harufa. So the exact definition of a shivcha harufa is a machloikus in the Sefer Krisus. What it is, the mainstream understanding, and this is how the Rambam paskens it, is that this is a woman she's a shivcha knanis, but she's half slave and half free. So, for example, she had two owners, and one of them freed her, and the other one did not. So now she's chetzi shivcha v'chetzi bas chorin, and she is mu'uresis, she's mekudeshes to an eved ivri, as we had in this past week's parasha. An eved ivri, the master is allowed to give him a shivcha knanis to live with, and he has children with her. This woman is a chetzi shivcha v'chetzi bas chorin, only an eved ivri would be able to marry her la'alocha. Other than that, a regular yid wouldn't be allowed to because he's also in a shifcha knanis, and a regular eved wouldn't be able to because he's half free. So in this case, she's mekudesh to an eved ivri, and now somebody else commits znus with her. So now also, the pasuk says over there the word ish, and Sabaya says we have a braisa, ish, aimly ella ish. Now from that, you would only know that it applies to an actual ish. Then test shonim v'yem echad shiroi l'biya minayin. How do we know the same din applies even if the one who had relations with her is a boy from 9 years old and older, where 9 years old, as we know throughout Shas, is already of the age where his bia is considered significant. Talmud Lama, v'ish. So therefore, the pasuk says v'ish. So the vav teaches us even a 9 year old. Now the boy himself is not going to get malchus because he's a cotton. But the woman, well, and actually what happens is, in the case of a shivcha harufa, the man doesn't get malchus, the man is supposed to bring a korban, the woman gets malchus. So in this case, the woman, being a gdola, is going to get malchus. Whether there's a korban or not, there's actually a machloikus of the Rambam and the Raivan on that. The Rambam holds that even though he's a cotton, he'd still bring a korban, he'd have to wait till he's an adult to bring a korban, but he'd still bring it. According to the Raivan, he'd be potter. Anyway, so we learn from the Vav of the Ish. So the point is, in other words, that if a ben teisha shanim, if a 9-year-old is able to do bia, we would assume that it means that he can also father children. Amalei, so no, Rabbah says, yeshloi v'ein emolid. No, it means that he's able to have relations, but he can't yet father a child. Kiptuor, shloi v'yeshlishdami. Because Rava says, compare it to the case, for example, of grain that has not yet grown one third of its growth. So in other words, the same way, you have a stalk of grain that has seeds in it. The seeds are there, but they don't actually, you plant them in the ground, nothing will grow of them because they're not mature enough. The same way, Rabbah says, yeah, a boy is able to have relations. He may even produce zera, but that zera is not fertile yet, and therefore I still stand by what I'm saying, that a cotton is not able to father children. I guess we could go on. No, nobody's here yet, actually, so I guess we might as well go on a little bit. So the Gemara continues, Dvei Chizkiya Tana. In the yeshiva of Chizkiya, they learned a different pasuk from which we see that a katan is not able to have children, again, meaning, in other words, therefore, that Rav Chisda's din wouldn't apply, because in any case, you can't have a katan who's able to father a child. Namely, also in last week's parasha, you have the expression, V'chi Yozid Ish, which when a person acts deliberately against somebody else and kills him, so then he's a ritzeach and he's chayev misa. Now, why does it say v'chi yozid? Why not, for example, v'chi yashia? When he acts as a rasha, why this unusual word yozid? So it means ish mezid umazria. The word mezid can also mean, the word mezid is also like a yozid yakov nozid. It means also like to cook a stew. So it means a gadol, mezid, is able to cook his zera. His zera is completely cooked, is completely developed, umazriya, and therefore he's able to conceive a child. They ain't cotton, mezid umazriya, but a cotton is not. And that's why the Torah says, v'chi yozid ish, says Tanad v'chizkiya, to hint at this point that only an ish is able to be mezid, is able to produce zera, that it's completely developed, and that can father a child. So the Mordechai clarifies with Ravashi. Where do we see that mezid is an expression of cooking? Yozid Yaakov Nozid, that Yaakov made a stew. So as the Tanadre Chizkiya is learning this from this source. So the Gemara is going to go on to say that we're going to continue with this discussion whether it is possible for a cotton to father children or not. So the Gemara continues. Don't we learn though in a brisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel that says that when it says ben sur murder means that he has to be a ben, he himself cannot be a father. So now let's analyze that. Hey, Fidomi, Ilema di Iabar, boss of the Icy Stasiris. Are you talking about that let's say he's married and his wife becomes pregnant after the boy develops Stasiris, but other than the common delak of Sazakan, and the baby is born before the hair grows enough, as we said in the Mishnah? The problem with that is, Mika shows Kulahai, how is there enough time? There's not that much time between when he starts developing Stasiris and Hakofa Sazakan. Rav Kudus B'doi says that the whole period of time in a boy's life when he could conceivably be a ben sur remora is a grand total of 3 months. And 3 months is not yet enough to have a baby. So Elalav di Abba Mikamid Elaisi, Shtesiris. Evidently, we must be talking about that he impregnated his wife before he developed Shtesiris. And then the baby is born before the Hakafas Zokan, and Rabbi Shmuel is telling us that in that case he's Potter, because at that point he's not a Ben, he himself is an Ab. Ushmam and a cotton moilin. Wouldn't that show, therefore, that a cotton is able to father a child? So what are you telling me, Rabba, that it can't be, and therefore that you're disagreeing with the premise of Rav Chisda's din? We see clearly from what Rabbi Shmuel is saying, that it seems that he could. And the answer is no. La'olam di abba bosa da icy shtei sairus va'olam bosa da act of zakan. In fact, you could be talking about that his wife became pregnant after he developed shtei sairus, because before shtei sairus that would be impossible. Va'olam bosa da act of zakan, and the baby was born after the hakafas zakan, after the hair grew in over there. I or kakasher did a krus v'doy. So you're wondering about what about Rav Krus v'doy's din, where he says that it's only 3 months. The reason is, he also Rav Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained, Amri B'mar Rava, they explain in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Ben V'loi Haroi, the Kreis Av. When we say Ben V'loi Av, it doesn't mean that he's actually a father. It means he has to be of the age where he can't even be called a father yet. Meaning, in other words, suppose that he were to have relations with his wife and she becomes pregnant, 3 months is how long it takes the pregnancy to be noticeable. At that point, he can already be called an av, even though his baby is still in the womb. So therefore, so that's what Reb Kruch's Vidoya means, that the maximum time is 3 months, because conceivably after 3 months he could already be an av, not that he already has a live baby, but that his wife is pregnant to the extent where the pregnancy is noticeable, and that then he can be called an av. So you can still say that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is not saying that he's able to father a child before Shtei Seiros. He would agree with Rabba that he can't. And he's just saying that if it were to happen before Hakafas Zakan, that in fact his wife does turn out to be pregnant, then in fact he would be potter. He wouldn't be a ben sereimoda. It's within the 3 months, but nevertheless he still, because it says ben veloy, and we learn from that veloy av, then therefore he'd be potter on those grounds. Okay. So now we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we'll continue analyzing this point about how long it takes a pregnancy to be noticeable and how this impinges on the Ben Sora Ramoda and all that. And eventually on Amud Beis, we're going to get into an interesting discussion of Taka, what is the earliest age that a boy could father children, where we're going to bring several examples from Tanakh where it seems that they were able to at younger ages.